Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Fan Morning Show. Brent Gunning and Sam McKee alongside me. Don't worry, all your favorites, Bunk and Blake and Ailish, they're all back next week, okay? A little vacation time for everybody, including, I think, our next guest, even though if he's talking to us at 8 in the morning, how much of a vacation could it possibly be? Hear him all the time calling Jays games, and he does a wonderful job of it. Dan Schulman joins us now. Dan, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. Thank you for that. Good morning. And yes, vacation is ending today, but it was a nice few days off. That All-Star break came at a good time.
Yeah, very much so. You know, Dan, obviously we have a ton of Jays questions for you, but look, you're a guy who's lived in the city, been a part of the market for a long time, and we were kind of doing our Toronto fan favorite power rankings, and we won't bore you with the details of all of that, but the thing that surprised us most in it is how quickly Alek Manoah has, dare I say, surpassed Vladdy. And it's not anything Vladdy's done, but it's just been how popular Manoah is. You hear him mic'd up at the All-Star game. It is incredible to me how quickly this guy has reached, potentially among all the likable Blue Jays, the most fan favorite status.
Yeah, I mean, his personality is as big as he is, right? So that's part of it. And if he had an ERA of 6, he wouldn't be that popular. But when you got one of the best ERAs in baseball and the personality. And it's even, I think it's stuff too, and you guys have seen it, you know, when we're doing the game and he's pitching, he doesn't just sit on the bench while the Blue Jays are hitting. He wraps up his arm and he's up on the top step leaning over the railing between a couple of teammates. Mm-hmm. Nobody does that. No, not a single starting pitcher. If you walk by him in the clubhouse on the day he's pitching, like you don't talk to starting pitchers on the day they're pitching. That's a well-known unwritten rule. And you'll walk by him and he'll go, "Hey, big guy, how you doing?" and give you a fist pump and just keep going. And that's from the day you meet him. And even before that, I remember talking to Pete Walker, and he said, "Wait till you see this guy. Like, the stuff is unbelievable, and just wait till you get a load of him." You know, he's unbelievably competitive, unbelievably personable. And I think the entire United States found out on Tuesday night what Canada already knew, that this guy's pretty special.
So you mentioned the All-Star game there, Dan, and having him in it. And, you know, the All-Star festivities actually kind of gave me great perspective on the Blue Jays because, you know, we're in it every day. You're calling games. You're watching it. You're in the day-to-day. But it actually kind of gave me a chance to zoom out and have some perspective on what the Blue Jays have here in terms of what a special group. You know, Vladdy's hitting fourth in the American League lineup, and they're stacked. You know, Manoah becoming a superstar below the border, doing that stuff with him being mic'd up. It just gave me a great chance to kind of zoom out after sort of a slow start to the season and just kind of be thankful for what the Jays actually have here.
Yeah, there are some great players and great stories and great personalities, and I feel very fortunate. You know, I've got 29 friends who are the 29 play-by-play guys for other teams around baseball, and we've got it pretty good. You know, like there's a lot of fun, a lot of personality, a lot of talent on this team. The next step, of course, is turning all those great individual players into a collective great team, right? To be better than 91 wins at the end of last year, to be better than 50 and 43 now. And I think we'd all agree they're kind of underperforming, underachieving a little bit right now. We all think there's more in there. I think most of us think it's coming, but that's the next step. But there's absolutely no question. Like, I've been doing this a long time, and there are not many teams where you can say, look how good that guy is and that guy and that guy, and look what a great personality these other guys have. And they're fun to watch. And that's the one thing I hear from all the other broadcasters for all the other teams. You know, on day one, they ask you all kinds of questions about the Blue Jays. And then like the morning of day three or the game, you know, the day of game three, when you see them at the ballpark, inevitably the first thing they say is, boy, you guys have a fun team. Like this must be a fun team to cover. And it is. There are some incredible stories. And the nice thing is, you know, Vladdy, Bo, Manoah, et cetera, these guys are all going to be here for a while, barring some unforeseen blockbuster deal. You know, these guys are young and under team control, as they say, for a number of years. So the nucleus of this team is going to stay together for a long time.
All right, so having said all that, now zooming back into the day-to-day nitty-gritty of the Blue Jays and them getting a big series started with the Boston Red Sox tonight, what are your thoughts on Jose Berríos not being one of the announced starters in this three-game set with them sort of, I guess, choosing Stripling over – is it the home-road splits? What is it with him that they've kind of opted for Stripling?
I thought you might ask that, and we haven't had any access to the team yet, so we don't have that answer. I'll get that answer when John Schneider does his media availability. I wasn't sure how they were going to do it. I thought Berríos would be in there, but I didn't know how they were going to do it. On the one hand, they could have said, okay, Gausman, let's give the ankle a few more days. On the other hand, they could have said, Manoa, you just had the whole All-Star break thing. Let's give you a few more days. So they basically had four guys, and they could choose any three of them. So the question will be asked. I might be the one who asked it. And if we were talking about 9 hours from now, I'd have an answer for you. I don't, it could have something to do even with beyond this series, looking at St. Louis and Detroit and how they line it up for that. I wasn't sure. I thought about it yesterday, which one of the four isn't going to be in there. And I really wasn't sure at all. I think this speaks to the faith they have in Ross Stripling. How he's pitched this year. His ERA as a starter is like in the low to mid twos, I believe. And I know he's not overpowering like the other guys are, but the numbers are the numbers. And he's been pitching great. I think he deserves the opportunity just to be one of the starters, not like, well, if they get somebody else, or he could be the swing guy, or he could do that. And, he's pitching so well from now, So I will admit to you, with vacation ending about 8 minutes ago when you called me, I have not looked up what Berríos has done against the Red Sox this year, or what Stripling has done against the Red Sox this year. So I apologize for that. But, it's nice when you have this is a good problem to have, right? Which one of your good starters isn't going to be in the big series?
No, but let me clarify too, Dan. Like, I am happy with the decision to go with Stripling because he's been excellent this year. He's been arguably, like, he's been right up there with Manoa in terms of how good he's been when he starts. I just, for me, when I look at it, it's just somewhat surprising that, your big money guy in Jose Berríos, I know he's been struggling,
yep,
and on merit, Stripling belongs there, but it's just surprising to see him not there in a big series against the Sox.
You know what it could be, and sometimes I think we can all overcomplicate these things. So Berríos pitched on the Sunday, right, the last day before the break. I think Stripling pitched Friday, I believe. So it could just be of not wanting to have too much rust on one guy. This guy pitched before that guy, so let's keep it in that order so that guy doesn't have too much rest, that sort of thing. I'm not sure, but it's you're right. They pay Berríos a lot of money to be one of their best starters, but I think at this point of the season, how much you make usually takes a backseat, or what your role was supposed to be usually takes a backseat to what makes the most sense now. So that's one question I want to ask. The other one I really want to ask is, what are they going to do with that Kikuchi Castillo spot? They've got an off day Monday, so they can, kick the can a little bit further down the road. They don't really have to worry about it, I guess, until next weekend when Detroit's in. But at some point in the next week and a half or so, somebody's going to have to start a game in that fifth spot, and I'm really curious how they're going to play that and if they're going to use the off day to push it a little bit further down the road.
Yeah, that's very much the question mark right now. Fan Morning Show, Brent Cunning, Sam McKee here with you on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Very, very happy to be joined by Dan Schulman here. We talked a lot about the pitching, and hey, why wouldn't we? It's been the biggest, I think, question mark this season with the hitters. They'll go through spells, but I think we all kind of know who these guys are. Obviously, when we talk about the lineup, big lefty bat, big lefty bat, big lefty bat. I don't think anybody expects the Jays to be in on Juan Soto, but we've all been plenty surprised in this market before. How big of a blow would it be to the Blue Jays if, I was looking at some betting odds and the Yankees are favorites right now? Who knows what that means? But does it change the Jays' approach this season at all if the Yankees end up landing Juan Soto? For me, I don't think it would, just because they're already so far removed from everybody else in the division. Do you think it would change anything from the Jays' perspective if he ends up there, or, heaven forbid, a Boston or somebody else making a big splash in the AL?
No, I don't think so, because I think there, if the Jays were, say, three games out of a third spot, I think that'd be different. But they're two games in the third spot ahead of Boston. And, they've shown the last couple of years, they've been very aggressive at the deadline the last couple of years. And, the Vladdy Bo window, for lack of a better term, let's call it the Vladdy Bo Manoa window, but the Vladdy Bo window, because they become free agents earlier, is wide open right now. Like, we're not early in it anymore. We're in it. So we're right in the middle of the window right now, and I think they've got to be aggressive and to go for it. And I think most GMs, presidents subscribe to the theory, once you get in, anything can happen. Like, look at the Atlanta Braves. Look at the Washington Nationals, the year that they won it. So I think you do what you have to do to get in, and then you take your chances. And I believe a couple of things. I believe the Blue Jays feel better that it's a 2 out of 3 in the first round rather than a 1-game playoff, as would I. And I think they feel really good, getting back to what we were talking about before, if it's 2 out of 3, look at the pitching options they have. Like, they have excellent rotation options for a short series, better, in my opinion, than just about every other team. The fifth spot's a big problem right now, but 1 through 4, they're pretty good. So I think, I would guess that they think pretty good about their chances of doing some damage in October if they can just get there. So I think wherever, no matter where Soto goes, if he goes anywhere, I don't think it changes the Blue Jays' plans.
So just as a sort of a big picture question here for the Jays, Dan, looking ahead to the second half of the season, what's going to be a really, really exciting one. It'll be all the games on Sportsnet, you calling a lot of them, it's really exciting. What are you kind of watching for as a big sort of non-trade storyline, or sort of like a, maybe not an X factor, not to get too sports radio-y on you, but like, what are you looking for in the second half to maybe have the Jays jump up in the wild card race and kind of, you know, solidify themselves as one of the three playoff teams?
Right. Well, trade deadline's obvious, right? What do they go out and do? I think they've got to get a high level talent in the bullpen. I assume they will. I hope they will. But other than that, I want to see what Vladdy does in the second half. Not to put it all on Vladdy, because that's, you know, that's a lot. It shouldn't be all on Vladdy, but you know, Vladdy's not had nearly the kind of year this year that he's had last year. Everybody knows it's in there because we saw it last year. As the games get bigger, can he get closer to what he was last year? Can he chase a little bit less? Can he, you know, do damage like he did last year? Get the walks up, more contact, less swing and miss. He's still having a very good year, like a very good year, but he's not having the extraordinary Vladdy kind of year that we had last year. Maybe that's not reasonable. Maybe, you know, once around the league after the year that he had last year, they made some adjustments and the bar needs to be set a little bit lower, but I still think there's room for improvement from the first half. And I think you could say the same thing about Bo. You know, Bo's had better years before than he's having this year. So those two guys are big for me. I think that's the biggest, those are the biggest X factors on the offensive side, is those two guys bringing it up a notch. Like, and Kirk can't do more. You know, Espinal's having a really good year. There are other guys who are closer to their ceilings or at their ceilings. I think Vladdy and Bo are two guys to watch. That and another power arm in the bullpen. And then, as we talked about, what happens in the fifth spot? Like, that fifth spot's been a major, major problem. Do they go out and get a back-end starter? You know, not a star, but just a guy that they can throw out there every 5 games and hope that they can give him a chance to win. And what do they do with Kikuchi? Like, first year of a 3-year, $36 million deal. I think when that spot comes around next week or whenever it is, I think they're going to give Kikuchi another shot. I think they're going to throw him back out there and see what happens, but there's only like 11 days till the trade deadline, so there's not a lot of time to figure this out.
I expect them to give Kikuchi the shot as well, because it's just so terrifying to effectively cut bait on a guy, like you said, in the first year of a deal, the 3 years, that much money committed to it. It's just, I don't know how much you would expect there. You know, you mentioned the leverage arm. Obviously, that's the big thing everybody is looking for and wants. And then you mentioned the year Kirk's having. I think, you know, as you said, there is still time left on the clock. Vladdy's not going anywhere. Bo's not going anywhere. Manoah has even more team control under that. But much like last year, I was making the point that you have to take advantage of these Vladimir Guerrero seasons, because as special of a player he is, that was a special year even for him. And this isn't to say I expect Alejandro Kirk to come crashing down to earth after the All-Star break or anything like that, but it is entirely possible this is the best season he ever has in his major league career. And it's just so important to kind of strike when the iron's hot with players like this. And to your point about Vladdy's approach and not changing it, but just trying to get the best version of himself out of it. We know Schneider bumped him up in the order a little bit. Do you think a change in the order changes anything at the plate for a guy like Vladdy, or do you think that's just about Schneider trying to get one of his best hitters that those extra couple at bats a series or a season?
I think that's most of what it is. They just want to get him up to the plate more because he's their best hitter. So, you know, Schneider talked about, you know, maybe he thinks he'll get pitched a little bit differently and that can benefit him, but I don't know if it'll have a difference. We've seen this at times before, and I don't really think there has been a difference, but that's not to say that it won't work now. You know, when they did it last time, they didn't have Kirk protecting Vladdy. I think Kirk does offer some protection. I think he's dangerous there. And then can the idea for Bo in the four spot is for him to be more of a, you know, run producer than a table setter, because he's more of a damage guy than an on-base percentage guy, obviously. So by having him up fourth, he's not coming up as much. But the theory from the Blue Jays side is he's coming up with more men on base, because you've got Springer, Vladdy, and Kirk ahead of him, three guys who get on base at a pretty good clip. So that's the theory. We'll see. I mean, when Schneider did it, he said, listen, I told them, like, he said they were on board. And then he said, like, we're not going to change it tomorrow or the next day or the next day. We're going to see how this goes for a while. I don't know what a while is. And they could switch it back next week, so if they're not working it. And if Laddie's just not comfortable or Bo's just not comfortable, that's something that has to be taken into consideration. But Schneider said they were both, quote, awesome in their conversations with him, so I think they're going to give it a try. But, you know, most teams these days are hitting their best hitter in a two spot. It's a different philosophy than it used to be. It used to be the best hitter hit third and the power hitter hit fourth, but most teams are hitting their best guys second to try to maximize their opportunities. What I think really helps too is if the Blue Jays are getting on base out of the 8 and 9 spots in the order, like whether it's Espinal and Biggio or Espinal and Jansen or whoever it is, if those guys are getting on base at a decent clip, that's more traffic out there when Vladdy comes up too.
So, Dan, I really appreciate getting up for us this morning and taking the time for us right after your vacation. I'm really going to test you here. I've never actually had the chance to talk to you on the radio, and I always love asking guys who've done a million games like you have across all sports. People probably ask you this all the time, but do you have a favorite that you've ever done that sticks out in your mind?
Not one. I'll give you the quick answer. But so most of my life has been baseball or college basketball. I used to do some NBA, but I never done football, hockey a million years ago. But so baseball for ESPN Radio, I do the playoffs all the time. I've been lucky enough to do the World Series for the last 11 years. So my first World Series, St. Louis, Texas, which might not jump out when I say that to listeners, but Game 6, the Rangers are a strike away from winning the World Series. And David Freese hits a triple right just over Nelson Cruz's head. Then he homers later on. They win the game. They win the series. So that series was great. Calling a Cubs series, you know, calling a Cubs winning the World Series. Not many people have done that, so that was really cool.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And yeah, and I was lucky enough for ESPN Radio to call the Bautista bat flip game too. I know nobody heard it in Canada, but I was lucky enough to be in the ballpark and call that. So, you know, playoff games are great, right? They're obviously great, and that's something I've really enjoyed. And then college basketball, you know, I've loved college basketball ever since I was a kid, and then to, you know, to be able to work on it for as many years as I have, just getting a chance to go to places like Duke and Carolina, Indiana, Kentucky. You know, I'm, again, not as big a deal in Canada. I know not a lot of people follow it, but I'm a college basketball junkie, and any Duke North Carolina game is like a Super Bowl to me. It feels that big. So, but then, you know, coming back home you know, being a Toronto guy and doing Jays games on Sportsnet, every game, honestly, every game feels special and sentimental to me. Like, it's a different feeling. You know, I'm calling games for my hometown team as opposed to calling games, you know, nationally in the U.S. I know we're national up here, but you know what I mean? I'm calling games for my hometown team. And that means a lot to me, too. I think as I get older, I'm getting more sentimental and more nostalgic and all of that kind of stuff. So it's been great coming back and doing games, and I'm so glad I'm going to, you know, hopefully be here for a long, long time. And let's have a few good October runs before it's all said and done. That would cap it off.
You coming home wasn't quite LeBron's return to Cleveland, but there was quite a bit of fanfare, Dan. I do remember when it happened, and people were fired up and excited about that. Really, really appreciate it. And quick little story for you. You'll appreciate this. We were interviewing someone earlier on this week. We were asking them about tough sports losses and what it's like to go through it. And we did not know that he was a Duke graduate. And so we got to listen to him commiserate about both those losses to North Carolina this year. So he's a guy who loves college basketball. I'm sure you can imagine that pain that gentleman was going through. Dan, thank you so much for the time. Really, really appreciate it this morning.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
Dan Schulman, our friend, colleague, friend strong. Colleague, though, that's definitely.
I don't have to get, like, too dorky, but that's a thrill for me to get to talk to Schulman. Like, I know, like, he works in sports, and, like, it's very, like, we're so lucky. We have a World Series broadcast every night. And, like, and Dan is, you know, it's very cool to get to talk to him. And he mentioned the game that I think is the greatest game ever played in any sport ever, which is Game 7 of the World Series between the Cubs and now Guardians. The game where, you know...
Santa Maria! I know that wasn't Dan's fault, so sorry.
Rajay Davis hitting the game-tying home run off of a absolutely dead Aroldis Chapman who had thrown 100 innings in that World Series. The all-time forgotten wildest call in maybe managerial history with Joel Maddon trying to get Javi Baez to bunt.
Yeah.
Like which is like, you remember that? Like, it was like, that would have been the biggest goat horn thing of all time. They lose that game. Ben Zobrist, of course, in extra innings after the rain delay with
Jason
the speech Hayward's by
speech.
Jason Hayward. Yeah. Like, David Fries hit a home run in that game. That, to me, sticks out when everyone asks me, like, I mean, no, I'm not Dan Shulman. People don't ask me, Sam, tell me what your favorite game is. But that, like, regale us with your favorite sporting event of all time. And if they asked me that, I would say Game 7 of the OHL Championship in 2011 when the Owen Sound Attack beat the Mississauga Majors in overtime win their first ever title. That's what I would say. But yes, that game I always look back on as one that I was sitting in my living room alone going, no way! Oh my God! Like, it was like one of those ones that made you jump out of your seat. So I'm glad he brought that game up.
Finished at like 1 in the morning, and that
was so late.
The reason I know that's the greatest game ever played is because I don't care. I don't, like, cool that the Cubs won. That's great. But, I mean, I don't really care. Like, Rajay Davis.
I was definitely rooting for the Cubbies.
Sure. No. Here's the thing. It's funny. I was at a bachelor party this weekend, and I, like, got into it is probably too strong of a term. But I was getting into it with some guys because they have this ability to just watch sports, and they're like, I just love competition. And I'm like, but you're not cheering for a guy? Nope. I mean, like, I get that you don't have to start, but eventually you watch a game long enough and you start pulling for somebody or some
for sure.
team.
Of course.
These guys were like, nope, I just love watching sport. And I'm like, that's great.
That's psycho. I would definitely be yelling at them too. I would have been on your side 100%.
Okay, good. I'm happy that we both might be crazy, but I'm happy I'm not alone in my crazy there. Man, that is truly the greatest game ever played. And yes, Dan Shulman had an incredible call, but our boy, Matt Viskurgin, letting the Santa Marias fly. And I was so confused as to what happened there. And then I remember Tim McAuliffe the next day on, at the time, Tim and Sid, saying, oh, that's just a Maltese thing. That's what we yell when we are fired up. And I was very happy to hear that. A little cultural learning during the World Series.
Can I say that after – it's funny you mentioned Tim and Sid because I was just about to. I remember that they did a full, like – full because remember they used to do their block. Their full first block was like a inning-by-inning breakdown of that game. And I remember watching it. It was just so – I wonder if that's on YouTube somewhere. Maybe it is. I just remember it being such an incredible breakdown of that. So here how about this? Here's hoping the Toronto Blue Jays in the second half have a Santa Maria moment.
Oh, that'd be lovely. I have to sneak this text in here because they like us, and we've been doing a lot of this since Dan Shulman stopped talking to us. Brendan in Tottenham. Boys, my favorite part about you two hosting is when in giggling at one of your takes jokes, and the other co-host giggles with me. Great gigglers. Have a great Friday, boys. We're a couple of little chuckleheads,
aren't we? I do love to giggle. I do love to giggle. There's no getting around it. I'm a giggler. I like to laugh.
How did we not...
Hey!
How did we not get Danelle to book us Jason Spezza this week? We could have had a giggle off with him. How did we not do it?
Okay, to go back to our fan favorite, Spezza. How did we not say Spezza? I guess he retired.
Somebody texted in on the text line saying, I can't find it right in front of me here, but saying that all grinders love Jason Spezza, and that's very true. And you bring up Spezza. Sorry to get depressing here at 8:30 on a Friday morning, but when Jason Spezza retired, there was only one active player left who had played against the Leafs in the second round of the playoffs.
Jesus.
And he apparently, we'll see when the official announcement comes out, but apparently Big Z, Zdeno Chara, is set to retire. If and when he hangs it up, there will be no players left in hockey that have played against the Leafs in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. If that isn't depressing, I don't know what is. So there you go. Just thought I'd throw
Barf.
I just throw that little sad nugget at you, McKee.
Barf.
No! God, please, no!
I can't believe I'm giggling at that, but ugh.
Oh, God.
Oh,
I mean, well, hold on.
Let's hit the
host
break.
Has Hossa retired? Has Hossa officially retired yet, or does he still have like a skin tag that's keeping him out?
I think he's officially. I don't think he's officially retired because he doesn't want to cook the books or the Blackhawks. But I think he's like a retired. You know, I think he's on LTIR.
Okay, all right, I'll accept it, even though I can hold out hope because I guarantee you he was on one of those teams.
Let's see what Marian Hossa. I'm just quickly bringing up his cap friendly.
A great player, man! What a great player he is.
Oh. He has – this is the – oh, no, he's not getting paid anymore. Last year was the last year of a – of a – Jesus. 12-year, $63 million contract.
Here's a question for you, just to throw some math at you because I'm not capable of doing it. What would Austin Matthews' 12-year contract look like? My God. Like, would he actually get to the $100 million? I guess he'd have to, right? 12 times 10 at the very, very least. Wow. Please, God. Let us have these back-diving deals that allow teams to be cap-compliant. Please, please, please let that be a thing again in the NHL. All right, I made us all sad with my depressing Leafs fact. It's time for the thing that is, without a shadow of a doubt, going to cheer up the boys the most. It's time. Mm. No, not time for the Atlantic Division power rankings. Stick around, maybe. No, it's time. Ross Tucker inspired us yesterday. Joe House gave us some excellent beer thoughts as well. We read text on the line about sediment being in beer and straining them through cheesecloth. It's time. The beer rankings are coming up next. No, not brands, but times and places to crush a cerveza or two. Fan Morning Show continues. If that isn't an all-star break topic, I don't know what is. Break got to get Sam McKee. That's coming up next on the Fan Morning Show.
Sportsnet 590.
Fan Morning Show, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee, the wait is over. Unlike every other topic we've teased this week, we're actually going to do one of the topics we've teased this week. I know, look at us, getting around to it finally. It's here.
Can I do a gripe? Can I do a gripe before we get into this?
Can you? You must. If you have a gripe, you gotta let it fly. You know me, I'm a big gripe guy. Gripe guy Gunning. GGG.
I'm about to gripe. So... I got a buddy coming into town next week, next Wednesday. A good friend of mine I haven't seen in a long time, Jamie
Kelly. I know
Kelly.
What this is about.
He's a spectacular guy, big Jays fan. We're gonna go play golf. I'm gonna take him to the fan studios, walk through. Then we're gonna go to the Jays game on Wednesday. Really looking forward to it. And he's like, "Hey man, could you book us a tee time so we can play around a golf?" I'm like, "Absolutely no problem." So I checked on an online booking system for a certain course.
So much so that your alarm went off during a break in the show.
My alarm went off. And I got on there at 8 a.m. as it changed, press the button, bing, bing, not one tee time available. Not one tee time available. And listen, if it's a membership course, if it's not a city course, it's not a public course, I get it. But how the hell is that possible? Is it like it's a Wednesday? It's not Saturday. It's not Canada Day. Like, what the hell is going on here? Get it together. I'm griping. Come on.
Hey, I'm here for a gripe. The people want to play Don Valley just like you do, and the bots are working overtime, it sounds like, is what that sounds like.
Honestly, is it a bot thing?
Gremlins in the system snapping up tee times is what it sounds like. Hey, you know, we make news here.
I might have just got one.
What do you got? Okay, all right.
I might have just got one.
Okay, Sam McKee is going to be distracted for 13 seconds while he plugs in all his info here. Thank you for that, Josh Santos. All right, are you done with your golf-related gripe, as much as I love it?
Yes, I am done now.
All right, we're done. Okay, so we've teased it. It's time. The best beer you can have time. We've got a list. I've got about 13,000 on here. When I first started putting together this list, prepping for this segment, I did not start with a power ranking. I'm like, let me just hammer out some beers I love to have. I like this one. I like that one. And then we'll sort through the mess later. So I've got a few here. I believe you do as well. We're going to go a little draft style here, back and forth, and we'll see if we're snagging beers from each other or if we're of different minds on this. I'm a nice guy, so I'm going to let you go first, Sam McKee. What's the number one ultimate beer you can have?
You're letting me go first, eh?
I am. I'm a kind guy like that. And I think there's I think this is like the most recent NHL draft. There's no clear one. I don't want to be the guy who's like, how could you leave X on the board? So it's not me being nice, really. It's me putting pressure on you.
This is very easy for me. And it is the obvious number one. There is no better beer. It's the post-hockey beer. The post-hockey beer is an undefeated beer, the best one you can have. You get into the room, you get the shoulder pads off, you get the top off, you get the skates off, and you sit there in your pants and your shinnies, and you get an ice-cold beer, and you commiserate about the loss that you just took, or you talk about the big win, and you just enjoy an ice-cold beer. Because you're already thirsty. Listen, no person that's listening to this that plays beer league hockey drinks enough water on the bench. It's just something that you don't do. You don't necessarily drink enough water. You're always dehydrated. You come in there into a hot room after an ice-cold game. You go in there, and you have an ice-cold beer after the game. So my number one choice, and we are very proud to announce, it is the post-hockey beer.
That's a great choice. That's a great choice. I cannot quibble, but if I have to be honest, it was my second choice on the docket. It was tough. Mm. We love the upside, and we love the present-day ability of post-hockey beer. It's a versatile thing. It can be used in anger. It can be used in celebration. I don't want to disparage your first overall pick, but I still have number one on my big board here. Number one on my big board. And this doesn't get to happen nearly as often as the post-hockey beer for most of us. But it is the first beer at the cottage. You get up, you're by a lake, you've just slogged through traffic up the 400, you're fist fighting with people, you hate your fellow man. Then you make several turns down roads, if we're going to even allow them to call that. You have somebody toss you one out of the cooler that's been in there, or maybe you just made a beer store trip when you get up there. You're looking at the lake. Maybe your toes are in there, and you crack that beer, and you know you don't have to think about anything other than food and fun for the next handful of days. Give me the first cottage beer as my first choice. Very happy to select it.
Wow, that is an excellent first overall pick. I'm okay with that. It just pales in comparison. The post hockey beer is going to go on to have a much better career. You took the low ceiling, the high ceiling guy, the low floor. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. Anyways,
no, I get you. It could rain. It could rain at the cottage, right? It could be raining. Then it's all of a sudden not that great a beer. That's fair. But I do think the ceiling is the highest. Go ahead. What do you got for third overall in beer rankings?
Okay, this is one that. It's almost illegal to do this activity without a beer.
Oh.
So I'm going to go with the barbecue beer.
Oh, this
the barbecue
is great.
Beer. Okay, this is what did you have this as your next pick? Was this the kid you wanted there, Berkey?
This is three on my big board here, the grilling beer. So great call. I cannot disparage you. I've really picked it up since I moved to the burbs. Big grilling beer guy.
So there's nothing like, you know, you've been marinating the wings all day. You got the burgers ready to rock. You got the sausages, no matter what. But there's nothing like, I won't even barbecue if I don't have a beer. Like, I'm like, what's the point of this? You know, you got the beer in one hand. You're opening it up. You're flipping the wings. You're flipping the burgers. You're cooking the steak. You're sipping an ice cold beverage with no haze to it. Crisp, clear, something nice on a hot summer day. Give me the barbecue beer with my second pick, the third overall pick.
I love that. I've really stepped that up since moving to the burbs. I am a huge barbecue beer guy. I got my little guy. He's playing T-ball out back there. I'm setting it up. I'm crushing a couple of cold ones. And like you said, the only part you omitted that's so crucial to that, you're giving the tongs a test, giving them a couple of clicks, just making sure everything's working click, click.
Make sure those tongs are tonging.
Got to check. That's an excellent beer. And we're pretty much in lockstep here. I did have first cottage beer as one, post-hockey beer as two, grilling beer as three. So we quibble a little bit on the draft order here, but we are in lockstep so far for the top three. I'm going to go with the last one I had on my top four here that has not been mentioned yet. Golf course beer on a scorching hot day.
Damn.
It's just... Look, you're walking. It's a billion degrees outside. You feel like you're in the Sahara. you see a lovely person driving by on a cart. They might have some coolers on the back of that thing. They might be willing to exchange beverages for currency. And it's just wonderful. Get the silver bullet in you. Little birdie juice is flowing. Just helps you relax out there. It's just so crucial. Doesn't need to happen all the time. But when you need it, my God, you need it. Give me the golf course beer as the fourth overall, my second selection among beer rankings. What do you say?
It's a good one. It's a really, really good one. And I think you can quibble. Like, remember we had Weir on the golf show and he was talking about the post-golf beer versus the one on the course. And he doesn't.
Yeah.
I love the one on the course. I love the one on the course. The problem with the one on the course, hey, if I'm going to quibble.
Yeah,
the,
please.
You know, it's got some, it's elite. It's an elite one, but it's got some knocks to its game. The first, like, three sips of the on-course beer is, it could be the first overall pick. But by the time
you get
to halfway through that beer, getting hot out, you're drinking some, it's, and of course, like we said, it's going to be light. So we're drinking very, like, you know, clear, crisp beer. It's going to get a little swilly towards the bottom. Mm-hmm. The bottom of that beer, sometimes not the best one. So the high end, elite. Bottom end, not so great.
That's very fair. But I did see a lot of people saying the post golf round beer. That's a fine beer. That's an honorable mention beer for sure. But it pales in comparison to the on-course beer, in my opinion. I don't know. Maybe you enjoyed a post-round beer when you were hoisting the trophy at the Lacombe Men's Open. Maybe that was a sweet one for you.
Did I ever?
I bet it was. But still, the on-course beer rules. Okay, so we've got, just to kind of reset things, we top four in the books: post-hockey beer, first cottage beer, grilling beer, on-course golf course beer are in order. The top four selections of our beer draft. McKee, do you have any others?
Okay.
I still have some honorable mentions to get to here, but those were my top four in a slightly different order.
Okay, I do. I have another pick here. Do you
can you come up with another pick? Oh, I have. I think I can handle coming up with another beer I like to drink. Yeah, I think I can handle it.
It is just a general one, but it's just a patio beer. The patio beer on a nice summer day.
Can I make an amendment here? Because I did have something very close to this in my honorable mentions. Not just a patio beer, the first patio beer. Maybe it's 16 degrees. Maybe you have a crew neck on. Maybe you're wearing jeans. But that first beer, when you convince yourself, no, it's time. I do want to sit outside and drink this beer with you. No, come on. It's fun. That beer is great. So I'm with you on any patio beer, but the first one, come on.
I will make my official pick the first patio beer. I'm stealing that from you. That is now my pick. I like that idea. Listen, we all convinced ourselves that sitting outside in the winter was cool to have a beer during COVID. We really did. I sat outside in some unreasonably cold weather to sit outside and have a beer, and it wasn't great. But the first one, like, what are we thinking? You know, late April, because there's always one warm day in March, usually on St. Patrick's Day, but it's not real. But, like, the late April when it's finally weather's starting to turn and you're having that first one. So, yes, with my third pick, I'm going with the first patio beer.
Okay, I like it. I'm happy we could come together to make that selection as top-notch as it could possibly be. This next beer, I have to be honest, a little pricey, but it's a great beer. Jay's Game beer. Sun is out. You know,
damn, that's a great pick.
Maybe hopefully it's not Saturday and you're like McKee Styles. You got, you know, not a, quite a full section, but you got some room to spread it out. You're with your pals. I don't know. I'm allergic to them, so I can't do it. Maybe you got some peanuts. Maybe you got some popcorn, really adding to that thirst effect. The Jay's Game beer is just exceptional. And obviously, you know, put this for any baseball, but it's baseball. The hockey beer is fine. The basketball beer is fine. I'm sure curling beers are great. But there's something about you're sitting outside, the roof is open, it's wonderful, and you're having a pop on a sunny day. Give me a Jay's Game beer.
That's a great, great, one that I that's value. Like, when I post this later, people are going to be saying, how the hell did you get that with the sixth overall pick? That is is one of my favorite ones. I mean, if Bunkus sees this list, he's going to kill me. Because, there's no one that loves a Jays game beer more than that guy. So that's a great pick. So do you want to go one more, or do you want to do honorable mention now?
So I have one more that I had, but I also just got a text. And this person has the number to the bat phone. This isn't even coming through the text line. This is coming through my own personal line. Now, this is more of a thing in my youth, but I'd be lying if it didn't happen once in a while. You put a beer in the snow when it's cold outside and you're playing shinny.
Oh, yeah.
But I've also got, and these are like all cousins of the post-hockey beer. They're all like cousins, so they don't really count, but we got to get them in there. A pop in the parking lot on a warm summer eve after some hockey, are just both of those
after
are
sporting
elite,
event
are elite pops. So I just wanted to sneak that in there. Those are the two honorable mentions that I had.
Okay, so I had four picks and I've gotten all my picks, so this is my last one. Okay.
Yep.
The yard work beer.
Oh, this is great.
Yard work beer is a really, you're outside, maybe you're planting some flowers, you're cutting the lawn, you're trimming the hedges, you're just milling about. You're doing general things, it's a nice day. You're like, you know what, I'm going to go outside and maybe put some things in the garage. Maybe I can organize a garage. I could dig up some weeds. And you're like, boy, you know what would make that all the better? A cool, crisp Pilsner, and you're just having a little sip of it. Maybe you got a little dirt on your hands, maybe a little dirt on the rim. Who cares? Get a little dirt in your teeth. You get all dirty, covered in dirt and beer. Having a yard work beer, there's few better than that. So that would be my fourth overall pick.
Really, really enjoy that. That's well done by you. So let's just run through.
Thank you.
Run through the beers we have here. The number one pick, and again, it would have been close for me, and this is why I made you go first. The post-hockey beer is the first overall pick, followed by the first cottage beer. At third overall, out of the Muskoka region, the grilling beer. At fourth overall, at a golf course near you, the golf course beer on a hot day on the course. The first patio beer of the year, the Jays game beer, and then the seventh and final selection here is the yard work. I think we could also amend it to just general tooling around outside beer. Just getting
about
stuff
beer
done. There is always the first day of summer or spring on a hot day. I think I missed it.
It's a mill fest out there.
I missed it this year somehow. I don't know. Maybe I was away. Maybe I was working. But the first day when it's warm outside, dude's got the cutoffs going, jean shorts are rocking, tunes. There's a lot of Springsteen in my area on this day. There's a lot of that going on. And, yes, there's definitely been a couple of pops crushed on those days. A few people weighing in on the text line, as we always love to hear from you. 590-590. Please include your name and location. I absolutely love this from Paul K. in Etobicoke. The undisputed best beer, and this is a big-time flex by Paul K. if he's had this beer, is a foamy Guinness following 18 sunny holes at Ballybun or any Irish links or Braben. Yeah, for a local fave, soul sustaining. Paul K. in Etobicoke. That's a great flex by him if he's had that first beer. Dave in Bradford, best time for a beer is Friday afternoon with your feet in the water at the cottage after a four-hour grind on the 400 to get there. He very, very much likes it. They're flying in. Likely a northern thing, but neighborhood garage beers are great. That's Jeff from Port Elgin. I've never had. Well, actually, that's a lie.
Port Elgin.
I have a buddy who
Woods.
He's turned his garage into like a little man cave out there. I've definitely had some garage beers watching a Leaf game on a warm April's Eve. I've definitely enjoyed that beer. Very much like that coming in. Come on, Steve in Toronto. Now, this is a beer I've enjoyed in my day. Luckily, I haven't enjoyed it in a while, and I hope to never enjoy it again, if I'm being honest. The post-move beer from Steve in Toronto. Any physical activity, that's a well-earned beer. Softball beer on the bench. Okay, yeah, that's definitely softball. I can guarantee you that. You were looking for a team, McKee. I think that guy's got one for you. Sounds like a team you'd be very, very comfortable on. off the airplane in the Caribbean beer. That's been a popular one we've got. For me, I kind of look at that like the cottage beer, but I'm sure people will tell me it's very different. The first true vacation beer versus a cottage beer.
Well, listen, the first, I've only done like an all-inclusive one time, and you know, it's a great beer. Don't get me wrong. You walk off the like the little shuttle that takes you there.
Oh yeah.
And they're literally just like are handing you the booze like the second you get in there, which is great. And just as an aside, when you go to the all-inclusive and everyone, like it was my first time, and every single person I talked to, go easy on the first day, Sammy. Yeah. It catches up to you. Like you got to be careful on the first day. Boy, did I not heed that advice, and I had an awful 36 hours after that. So, yeah, if anyone going to an all-inclusive in the dead of summer, probably not. But anyone going out there that's never done it, be careful on the first day.
I'll give you a little PSA. When my lovely wife and I went to watch Tiger in the Bahamas, we stayed at an all-inclusive there for a couple of days. And there was a woman who, when we rolled in there at 9 in the morning, was already stationed at the swim-up bar. And she was there when I got back from the golf tournament. And then when I went, like, went out for like a late glass of wine at night, and you should have seen the boys. Like, they're cleaning the pool like they do in any resort, but there was a lot of attention played to this one particular bar seat, because I don't think she moved the entire day. I think she's just stationary there. You want to talk about greasy, and you want to talk about not taking it easy. That's exactly what I saw there. So, wow, a couple of tangents there. Keep the text coming in, 590, 590. Please include your name and location.
This is one that definitely could have been on our big board and did not get on the big board, which is a travesty, and we're both Canadians. This is from Scott in Sudbury. The campfire beer.
Oh, how dare we? For shame
Bad
on
Canadians.
Us. Honestly, for shame on us. I got to read this text here. Hey, boys, just grinding, cutting some greens here in Collingwood. I wonder if he's cutting some of the greens I played on this past weekend. This draft is reminding me of the 11 a.m. beer on Sunday at the Canadian Open. Just watching some golf, strolling around. Love the show. Thanks, boys. Hugh from Collingwood. Thanks, you. If you're up grinding, rolling, and cutting greens, that's what we like to hear. And it's similar to the golf course beer. But, you know, you and I, journalists, didn't have it. I'll speak for myself. Maybe you want to incriminate or not incriminate yourself. The beer at the Canadian Open, that's an exceptional beer. We even saw Justin Thomas's dad crush one. That's how good it was that you had to get in on the beer at the Canadian Open.
A lot of people texting in the shower beer.
Mm.
Are you a shower beer guy? I used to be in my early 20s. Like, if I was like going in for a big night out or something, crush a couple paps in the shower, but not anymore.
I remember the shower beer is such a thing from like my year living in res at the University of Windsor. I very much remember, oh, boys, getting to, all right, time to shower up. We're having a night. Putting on, there's going to be guys wearing Affliction t-shirts. It's going to be a time, okay? We're going to go out. We're going to have some fun. Somebody's going to fight, and we're going to drink about 5 beer in the shower as we get ready to go out and have a night. Not a thing that's part of my repertoire anymore, but there was a time in my life where that beer would be, I'm not going to say it would have been the first beer, but it would have been, it had been up there. There was a time in my life where that beer was exceedingly, exceedingly special to me.
Oh, God. Leafs playoff loss beer? That's not on the list, Scott and Sudbury. Come on, pal.
I'll speak to Scott and Sudbury. I like something called sleep after a Leafs playoff loss. Yeah. Here's what I like to do.
Close my eyes.
I like to flick on my mic. I like to yell at Gord Stellick, asking him how this team could do this to me again. And he says, I don't know. They've been doing it to me even longer. And then I go to bed sad. That's my post-Leafs playoff loss routine there.
So this is the last one I'll get in before we head to break and talk to our boy Nick Richard. And we'll maybe get his take on what he thinks the best beer is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, this is from Kevin in Creemore. And in Creemore, they make beer in Creemore. So this man knows his way around a beer. The unexpected beer has to be the best undisputed beer. Now, that is an interesting one. How would you interpret that?
So it's, to me, it's... You are trying to think. Yeah, this is interesting. I guess, like, in my world, the way it happens is how it most often would happen in my world is I'd bump into somebody at the office and say, you want to go grab a pint, when I had no plans of doing so. That's the most unexpected. Okay. The only other thing I could think of, and like I don't really find myself in this situation, is if you're kind of grabbing like a solo lunch, you're just kind of killing some time, you're eating somewhere, run into a friend, all of a sudden lunch turns into three beers. That'd be great. I can't say it's happened all that often. When I'm having a beer, I plan to have a beer, let me tell you. So that's great that you got it in there, but I don't know how often it happens. Maybe that's what makes it so special.
We're getting some illegal beers on the text line here. I'm not going to read them on the air, but
okay.
We're getting some. Let's hit the break.
also, guys sending in Soto texts. Clearly, you've had some beers. Tell me which beer you've been having that's been leading to these Juan Soto trade proposals, because I thoroughly enjoyed that. If you don't think we're getting both of our final guests today to weigh in on their favorite beer, Nick Richard and Jared Karabas going to join us later on. Richard up first. Got to talk to him about the Leafs. Goaltending. Where do they sit in the Atlantic? What's going on? Which of these Atlantic teams is going to fall off? Somebody has to eventually for this younger crop. And how do the Leafs stack up against last year's Leafs? Lots to get into. And yes, there's still 1 hour left. Fan Morning Show. Brent Gutting and Sam McKee.
And more beer talk.